Welcome to Courtside, everyone, a discussion of legal issues. Today, I want to talk about the new assault on the right to vote, which is going on in various states. This week, it was led by Florida. And this is a movement that has been supercharged by Donald Trump and his bogus claims of election fraud. Really, those claims of election fraud, the big lie, it's all just shorthand for those people are voting. And that's their complaint. So what I want to do today is explain what these different voting restrictions are, and what they mean, and what we can do about it. And the worst part about the big lie is that we've all seen it coming for months and months. Donald Trump said even before the election, he wouldn't accept the results if he lost. This is truly like the world's slowest car crash, except the wreckage is our democratic norms and our commitment to equality, particularly the idea of one person, one vote. So let me start with Florida, because in Florida, we had this week signed into law restrictions placed by Governor DeSantis and the Florida legislature. Governor DeSantis went and actually signed these things into law and brought one television station and only one, Fox News, to be able to witness it. If he'd only shown that kind of selectivity when he opened bars for summer break, in the middle of a global pandemic, we would have been better off, at least a matter of public health. But the restrictions he signed into law are ones that make it harder to vote. So they say, for example, you can't use a ballot drop boxes on election day. They add all sorts of onerous new ID requirements. They require a reapplication for an absentee ballot. And, you know, they do this all, DeSantis does this all in a secret meeting with Fox News. You know, nothing to me says integrity and transparency like holding a closed door session to decide who gets to vote. And the announcement itself on Fox, which I braved myself to watch, was incoherent. Governor DeSantis knows he's in a double bind. After all, this is the same guy who 3 months ago proclaimed that Florida had held, quote, the smoothest, most successful election of any state in the country. So if he admits that the election wasn't secure, then who's to blame more than the governor who administered it, who's a guy named DeSantis? But if he doesn't lie about the possibility of voter fraud in November, then what's the point of this bill? I'd like to say I haven't seen anything more cynical, but then again, champion of freedom, Ron DeSantis, is the same guy who just literally signed a bill that makes it easier to imprison peaceful protesters. So this guy just must be making a habit of such cynicism. Anyway, this Florida law was challenged within approximately 9 minutes of DeSantis signing it into law, and I'm surprised it took that long. Mark Elias, superstar lawyer, has already sued, so has the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, saying it violates Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which prohibits actions by legislatures that have a retrogressive effect on minorities and the right to vote. So that's Florida. That litigation's going to continue, really start up. I suspect it will be successful. I don't think Florida has a good track record to point to in terms of voting restrictions, and certainly not the need for it in this case. So that's Florida. Meanwhile, the state of Texas is getting a little jealous of Florida's voting restrictions, and Republicans there have been pushing a variety of vote suppression tactics in that state. And indeed, on Friday night, the House and Senate of Texas passed competing bills, but there is enough overlap that they presumably can be reconciled. And one of the things that there is overlap on is that the new legislation makes it a felony to send someone a vote by mail application if they don't request one. And that provision does look like it's passed both the Texas House and the Senate. This is a big deal because like counties like Harris County in the last election wanted to send ballots to all 2.4 million registered voters. And many other Texas counties wanted to send ballots to everyone 65 and over and things like that. That would be all considered a felony under this bill. Yes, it's a crime to help people vote. And the legislation goes further. Some of the language in the bill would require documents to be submitted If you needed medical assistance with your ballot, if you needed someone to help you with your voting, you have to submit documents. It looks like other versions have that struck out, so we'll have to see. But I do want to say one very positive development is the reaction of the corporate community to these voting restrictions. They haven't just been like, oh, these things are unconstitutional, illegal, and be challenged in court. That's all true. But even before that, and you know, the way our founders always thought, the right way to deal with this is at the front end by not passing the legislation in the first place. And that's what the corporate community has done. Ken Frazier, the CEO of Merck, has been a national hero in leading corporate CEOs to say, hey, you know, these things are fundamentally un-American. American Airlines, Microsoft, Dell, all sorts of different companies protesting what's going on in Texas. And the lieutenant governor of Texas, Dan Patrick, got upset saying, quote, stay out of things you don't know anything about, to the CEOs, and said they might have a bill they might want to pass. They might want us to pass for them. Good luck. Ha ha. You know, yeah, nice threat. I'm sure American Airlines finds that really reassuring and even keeled, lieutenant governor. That's a responsible way to act. Threatening companies if they don't, you know, for standing up for Americans and their right to vote. Come on. Now, Arizona, for its stake, is also considering making it a felony to consent to send a vote by mail application. And there's even a proposal in the Arizona legislature that says that they should decide who the presidential electors go to, the Electoral College, that the people's vote in Arizona should be nullified and it should be up to the state legislatures. Nothing says democracy and respect for it like these proposals. Now, also going on in Arizona is, believe it or not, yet another recount proceeding. This one has been outsourced from Republican officials in Maricopa County to a Florida company called, I kid you not, Cyber Ninjas. Not even a Arizona presence. This is a Florida company. And yes, I too would entrust documents that I'm required to keep safe by law, that is the voting documents, to a Florida company called Cyber Ninjas, which, by the way, the Cyber Ninjas evidently require their employees to sign non-disclosure agreements, NDAs. And evidently their leader of Cyber Ninjas, Doug Logan, has been someone who's been promoting false claims about voter fraud. So that has led the U.S. Justice Department to investigate what in the world is going on in Arizona with these recounts. And they've already sent a letter to Arizona about this. And look, I'm old enough to remember when a scam was scam you got was like an email from a Nigerian prince, not a months long campaign from sitting government officials and state legislative bodies and the like. I'm pretty sure that the only thing that this recount is going to accomplish is to make Donald Trump the candidate to lose the most states twice. Now take a step back. What does all of this say? What are all these restrictions about? I think it says three things. Number one, it indicates a real lack of seriousness in the Republican Party right now. A poll was just done today. 60% of Republicans think that Joe Biden won the election by fraud. 60%. The Republican Party is leaving the reality-based community and adopting fundamentally un-American views. This idea that if you lose an election, it must be rigged. It's flatly contradicted by the facts. 60 courts have ruled against these big lie claims, and these courts have been mostly staffed by Republican appointees. I mean, does any serious person think that these claims about the big lie are right? I mean, just one serious person. Rudy Giuliani and Elise Stefanik don't count, of course. So, you know, we're 60 lawsuits in, millions of recounted votes later, and Republicans are still insisting that they can pull the next one out of the bag. And look, if Republicans wanted to lose this badly, they could have just invested in a Donald Trump property like the rest of Trump's marks. So that's number one, the lack of seriousness. Number two, it says to me some bad news for the future. Because look, normally when you lose something, whether it's a pitch or like if I lose a Supreme Court argument, I'm doing a postmortem. I'm sitting there thinking, how did I not get 5 votes? What did I do? How can I appeal to more people? Good politicians, of course, do that. They analyze everything. They go back and do a postmortem and say, how can I do things differently? Republican Party is not engaged in that one bit. There's no introspection. Instead, it's, oh, we did everything right. It must be someone else's fault. That's bad news for the future. We need to have two parties. We need to have a vibrant party to challenge the Democrats. We can't have a party of QAnon and Marjorie Taylor Greene and, you know, these jokers. Third thing that I think this really signifies is a lack of public spiritness on the part of these folks. You know, government service is about something broader than just what you do in office. It's not about you. At the end of the day, I mean, you know, every time I was in government, that's what I was struck with, was the people who did the best were not the people trying to cap the glory and the like. They were the people just doing the work of the government. And it's a mission that's far broader than you. And I saw that in so many different people, whether it was Al Gore or Chief Justice Roberts. You know, they are institutionalists. They care about the system more than they care about themselves. And indeed, our entire system is based on these ideas. You know, we have freedom of speech. The whole idea is that every individual is empowered, but will exercise that power responsibly. Same with even presidential power. The idea is that presidents should have unique powers to shape, you know, to take action, to shape discourse and the like. And when you add those two things together, freedom of speech and presidential power, you see the system worked really well for the last couple hundred years because presidents largely wielded their powers responsibly, their powers, their speech, all of it responsibly, until Donald Trump. And the system is, of course, predicated on officials adhering to certain norms. You've heard that a million times, and there is some truth to that. But it's also true that our system anticipated that sometimes our leaders wouldn't adhere to norms. The whole idea of the Constitution, after all, as Madison says in Federalist Paper 51, is that men, to use the antiquated term, aren't angels. He says if men were angels, government wouldn't be necessary. But because they aren't, because they will act with malice and self-interest, that's why he says you need government. That's why our founders set up a structure with three branches of government, state versus federal, but also the power to vote, the right to vote, and the power of speech, and the power of a free press. And you take all of that together, and that points the way to the solution to these voting restrictions. Because you all have to report what you see. You have to speak up. You're empowered. Our Constitution gives you these powers. You have the chance to be the next Darnella Frazier, chronicling what is happening to our democracy. Our founders didn't think this was going to be easy. They knew it wouldn't be. They fought a war over it, after all. And they knew they left so much, like the peculiar institution of slavery, unresolved at the time in 1787. But it's our turn now, and we shouldn't shy away from eliminating these badges and incidents of slavery, which is what the Florida restrictions are, which is what the Texas restrictions are, which is what the Arizona recount is about. We can stop it. We've got the power. We've got the legal tools. And we've got all of you. So that's Courtside for tonight. I'll see you next week.